Good morning, everyone. It looks like we have all the principal parties here. Welcome to the virtual Court of Appeals for June 10. And Judges Ross Reyes and myself, Judge Sleater, are presiding. We are recording the proceeding, even though we're all appearing in different locations. And a reminder to counsel that the protocol is otherwise the same, and that appellant will have 15 minutes, same for respondent, and then 5 minutes of rebuttal if appellant chooses. We do ask that you identify yourself when it's your turn for the record, because we are recording the proceedings. The marshal will use his phone to reflect the time that you have remaining, so hopefully you'll continue to see that. If at any time you are unable to hear or see, do some gyration such that we will get a message that we have an issue in that regard, and we'll try to resurrect it. So far this morning, it's been good. This is the second of our three oral virtual hearings that we have. And we do have the matter of Howard Norsetter versus Minnesota Twins, LLC, A19-1731. And so, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Steve Ure, and I represent the plaintiff in this matter, Howard Norsetter. Drawing factual inferences in favor of the plaintiff, a jury reasonably could conclude that the Twins did not renew his contract for 2018 and did not consider him for available other positions and did not even inform him about other positions because he was too old and did not fit in the Twins' youth-oriented philosophy. Age discriminations are notoriously difficult to prove. As a court has indicated, employers rarely are so cooperative as to include a notation in the personnel file that their actions are motivated by factors expressly forbidden by law.
Mr. Ure,
yes.
Can I jump in real quick here just to clarify something? I thought your argument was that Mr. Norsetter had expressed an interest in being considered for the other positions, but I understand you now to be saying that he didn't know there were other positions and wasn't notified. So just, can you clarify your position on that? That's
correct, Your Honor. He indicated that he would work in other capacities, that he would move, that he would even take a cut in his salary. And he was never informed that there were other openings. They don't post the openings. So he had no way to know that they existed, but he did express to top management his desire to remain with the Twins.
Mr. Ure, I have a couple questions on your statements there. First of all, you said he reported to top management, but my recollection from the record is that he informed his supervisor.
That's correct, who informed Mr. Falvey and Mr. Levine.
Okay, but his
supervisor is the vice president of player personnel.
Okay, but you said that he informed top management, but he only informed his direct supervisor. And what happened after that is, he never informed other people, other management within the organization, correct?
Correct, but I would consider Mr. Radcliffe to be top management with the Twins.
Okay, but it was only one person he informed, his direct supervisor.
Correct, and Mr. Radcliffe later told him that he had informed.
Right, but I'm just focusing on, Mr. Ure, I'm just focusing on what he informed, who he informed. The other thing is, you said that the Twins never informed him of other positions. That sounds a little different from what you argued before. Are you aware of any case law requiring the employer to inform the employee of other positions?
There's not case law that I'm aware of that requires it. However, the fact that he was not informed of other positions is certainly relevant to the question of pretext, Your Honor.
Is there any case law to that effect that it relates to the idea of pretext then?
There is case law to that effect, some of which is cited in our brief.
Is there a case law that says that the failure of an employer to inform an employee of other positions an indication of pretext?
There is, Your Honor.
Okay, what cases cite to for that proposition?
One moment, Your Honor.
And are they cited in your brief?
Yeah. It's the Castillico case, which is cited on the top of page 34 of the brief. and let me quote from it, perhaps the most significant evidence from which the jury could have inferred ageist amicus was the employee's failure, I'm sorry, was the employer's failure to assist the plaintiff to find a new position at ABM.
Mr. Year, can I take you to another component of your argument?
Sure.
With regard to the appointment of the special master, what does the record say about Mr. Norstedter's preservation of that issue? Did he object to the appointment of the special master or indicate disapproval of the appointment of a special master?
There were two separate phone conversations with the district court concerning this. The first one, the court suggested the idea of appointing a special master. I objected. He did not appoint one at that time. The next one, my recollection is that he simply indicated that he would be appointing a special master.
When you say that you objected, we can find that in the record, or is that in a phone conversation that's not in the record?
It was in the phone conversation, which I don't believe was recorded or transcribed.
So, and was there a request for the making of a record of what took place in that phone call?
Not by me.
By anybody?
Not to my knowledge.
So, okay. Another question I have goes to your reliance on Rule 4 for service of the subpoena for the subpoena deuces tecum, as opposed to Rule 45. Why would we look to Rule 4 when we have a more specific rule indicating who is to be served with a subpoena or deposition?
Well, because I don't think Rule 45 answers the specific question of the service of subpoena on an unincorporated association.
Well, it answers to whom service of a subpoena would go to. It goes to the person as opposed to a member of that person. I mean, assuming that Major League Baseball is a person, let me take a step back. I'm trying to get a sense in the record. Maybe you can give us an understanding as to why once your client was given notice by Major League Baseball that there's a different avenue, perhaps a more, to perfect the subpoena service. Was there something that prevented then simply serving Major League Baseball in the way that they requested?
There was, because at that point, there's a rule, as I understand it, in New York that a subpoena has to be served, I can't remember the exact, a certain period of time prior to the date of compliance, and there wasn't sufficient time in this case pursuant to the scheduling order.
But not enough time to have the deposition, you mean, taken after notice?
Correct. But again, it's our position that Rule 45 does not indicate how to serve an incorporated association. Rule 4 specifically addresses that issue.
Well, Rule 4 addresses the issue as to a summons.
Correct.
And the rule is very clear that it's talking about a summons. And Rule 45 is clear that it's talking about a subpoena. So why does it matter? I'm at a loss for why it matters what Rule 4 says.
Well, Rule 45 says service of a subpoena upon a person named therein shall be made by delivering a copy thereof to such person. I consider the Twins to be Major League Baseball. They're not a subsidiary. They're not an agent. They are a member. They are part of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball is composed of the 30 Major League Baseball clubs. But 45 does not specifically refer to unincorporated associations. So when you look at 4 and you see that you can actually start a lawsuit against an unincorporated, I could start a lawsuit against Major League Baseball by serving the Twins.
And so if your argument correctly, then if you wanted to depose the general manager of the Yankees, you could serve the Twins?
No, if I wanted to depose him, I would have to serve him individually.
You wanted to, well, why though? He's a member of the organization, and you're saying that The member is the organization. I'm not sure I follow.
He's not a member. The team is a member, but he's not a member. I don't think that it, just because the Twins are a member of Major League Baseball, it doesn't follow that every employee of the Twins is a member of Major League.
Okay, let's assume you wanted to a subpoena deuces tecum for documents you believed are being held by the New York Yankees. I think by your logic, you would be able to serve the St. Louis Cardinals or the Twins or any other member because they're all the same organization.
I don't see it that way. I mean, I look at the Twins.
I don't want to bog you down in this part of your argument. I'd like you to get to the heart of other issues you'd like to raise in your time remaining.
Okay. Thank you. So applying the test in terms of age discrimination, the first question is whether plaintiff has made out a prima facie case. The district court held that we had, and I think there's clear evidence that, in fact, we had sufficient evidence indicating that age amicus may have been a relevant factor in the decision not to consider nor set her forever positions. Moving to the second step, the burden is then on the defendant to show
age animus or age amicus?
Discrimination based on age. Sorry.
I think you mean animus as opposed to
animus.
Unfriendly, not friendly towards towards age. But
That's certainly important. You're correct, Your Honor. And moving on to the second step, the question is whether the defendant puts forth a reasonable, non-discriminatory justification for his actions. We think that they fail on this point. First of all, initially, at the time, they told Mr. Ratcliffe, told Mr. Norsetter that the reason he would not be considered is because there was concern that if he had to move, he would be considered a disgruntled employee. After the lawsuit is filed, they argue that the reason he wasn't considered was that he was, quote, an Australian scout, which doesn't really answer the question, because the question is there something that would indicate that he would not perform at a reasonably high level in one of the other positions? Two of those positions were in Japan and Taiwan, which were actually areas that Mr. Norsetter was covering during the time that he was based in Australia and at the time that...
Mr. Err, can I just clarify, if I understood what you just said, in terms of the second prong, your client is satisfied that the court was correct, at least in the primary portion of the issue is that the Twins have demonstrated a non-discriminatory reason to terminate his position. You're satisfied that is met. What you are referring to, again, is going back perhaps to some of the discussion when you started out the session with related to failure to consider him for other positions. Am I correct in that?
We're not arguing at this point, based on the information in the record, that the decision of the Twins to change their international scouting strategy and the decision of the Twins to decide that they wanted to reduce their scouting in Australia, and even the decision of the Twins that they didn't want to have a scout living in Australia. We're not arguing at this point.
So separate, okay, thank you. Separate from the discussion you had earlier with Judge Reyes regarding whom he must solicit to indicate he's interested, let's just set that aside for a moment. Is there any other legal obligation contractually or in the Human Rights Act that would require the Twins to offer him a position anywhere else once a non-discriminatory discriminatory reason has been proffered?
Okay, again, it's our position that they did not proffer a plausible non-discriminatory reason. But the answer to your question, the law does not require that. However, the absence, the failure to do so, is relevant to the question of whether there's pretext, because you have to scratch your head and say, well, he was a very good scout. They didn't want him in Australia anymore. Why would they not consider him for other positions? Why would they not notify him of other positions? Positions, for the most part, which were filled by people in their 20s and 30s. And again, this case, unlike I think most age discrimination cases, they're not saying, well, you know, his performance was subpar. They acknowledge that he was a very good scout. So there is no reasonable basis for them not to give him an opportunity to compete for the other open positions. And as we indicate in our brief, we believe there's significant additional evidence indicating that the defendant's argument as to why they did not want him with the organization is pretext. There's other evidence to that effect. But again, saying that he's an Australian scout, which is basically their argument, says absolutely nothing about whether he would be a good scout in the United States, says nothing about why he shouldn't be able to continue scouting in Japan or Taiwan. He had spent much of his career scouting in the United States. He grew up in the United States. The people, again, that were hired for those positions were much less experienced than he was. And he wasn't given the opportunity to even compete for those positions. And you have to wonder why.
When you say they were less experienced than him, what are you basing that on? I know there is a dispute as to whether your client should have access to the resumes of those individuals. Are you basing it upon just their age, or what is it? Since you don't have their resumes, what's the basis?
Well, we don't. And again, defendant argued that it's irrelevant because they're not claiming that Mr. Narsetter was dismissed for cause. But the fact that Howard was a scout for the Twins for over 25 years, I think one could reasonably infer that a scout in the 20s, who's in their 20s, doesn't have the same type of experience, regardless of what their resume says.
Thank you, Mr. Irwin. You'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal if you want to either follow up on that question or other comments you wish to make. And counsel for respondent, you may identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Jason Asmus, Taft, Stettinius, and Hollister. With me, socially distanced in the conference room, is Danielle Fitzsimmons as well. We represent the respondent in this case, Minnesota Twins, LLC. I want to start by picking up on one of the questions that both Judge Ross and Judge Reyes asked, which is, tell me about this expressing interest in other scouting positions. And here's what the record shows us is it's Mr. Narsetter was an Australian-based scout since 1991, a long, long time. He lived in Australia since 1984. When he started this lawsuit, Mr. Narsetter did not know that the Twins, when they made the business decision to change their organizational philosophy to shift from Australia and other niche markets and put their efforts to the areas producing the most major league talent, he didn't know that the Twins hadn't hired any other international scouts. And so during the course of this lawsuit, the focus shifted to, well, okay, so you hired 8 domestic scouts. You should have considered me for those positions, even though I didn't ask for to be considered for those, and I didn't even know that they existed at the time.
Let me stop you there. Are you disputing that Mr. Radcliffe communicated to Levine and Falvey that, in fact, Mr. Narsetter was interested in retaining his scout relationship with the team?
No, Your Honor, not disputing that. And in fact, it's a good question. Let me read the deposition testimony exactly, because I think it illustrates the point. This is Mr. Norsetter's deposition testimony. He says, tell them I'll take a $100,000 pay cut to stay in Australia and just cover Australia. Okay, let me stop there. That's a position that didn't exist. And so obviously he wasn't considered for that position. That's the only specific position that he ever identified. And then in his deposition testimony, he referred very generally to, tell them I'll move back, I'll move to the States, I'll do whatever they need me to do. I'm willing to do what's necessary to help the team win. I'm willing to do whatever's asked of me. I'm willing to do whatever role they had, I could still help the team. We don't dispute that he had that conversation with Mr. Radcliffe, and Mr. Radcliffe testified that he informed Mr. Falvey and Mr. Levine that those statements were made. But the problem is...
Well, just so we're clear, when you say those statements, you're referring to those statements in the earlier communication, not those statements in the deposition of Mr. Narsetter.
Correct. The statements that Mr. Narsetter made to Mr. Radcliffe that he was willing to, in essence, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to stay. Our position is, Your Honor, that as a matter of law...
Hold on. I'm just, I'm not clear on what you're saying. You're saying that it was communicated that he was willing to do whatever it takes to stay in the organization, or do whatever it takes to stay as in Australia, to stay in Australia and take a pay cut and continue to scout in Australia. I just want to be clear on what was communicated.
He made both statements. The only specific statement he made as to a particular position was, I'll take a pay cut to stay and only scout in Australia.
But he also, okay, just so I'm clear, you're acknowledging that he also, at least as far as the record is concerned, when we construe the facts in the light most favorable to Mr. Norsetter, that he also made the statement that he's willing to do whatever it takes to remain in the organization. Yeah. And we can infer, again, construing all facts in favor of the non-moving party, that that would include relocating to the United States and transferring his skills to scout wherever the organization needs scouting, anywhere in the world.
The deposition testimony is what it is, Your Honor, but our position is simply saying, I will do whatever it takes to stay with the organization or stay with my employer, is not seeking out a position that exists. It's just saying, I'll do whatever it takes to stay. And that leads to the twins' legitimate non-discriminatory reason for not considering him for other positions was their business decision to change their international scouting philosophy, which nobody disputes.
But counsel, he said...
If he's not informed of other positions, which I think is a fact we have to accept for the purpose of summary judgment, then how could he make a more specific request applying to any one of those positions? It seems to me from the record that this is exactly how one applies for those positions, to say that I'm willing to stay on in any capacity, implying that that means to fill any one of the positions that he doesn't happen to know about because it's not been disclosed to him.
So then we get to another comment that was made is, who did he say that to? He talked to Mr. Radcliffe. The positions that were open were in domestic scouting. Mr. Johnson is the amateur director of domestic scouting. Mr. Style is the director of pro scouting. No discussions with him, with either of those gentlemen whatsoever. And again, this issue then really goes to the prima facie.
Why does that matter if he communicated to the organization? He communicated to Mr. Radcliffe, who then relayed that communication on to Levine and Falvey. I don't know why it is that that's not enough to express an interest in a position. And I saw some communication that suggested that, I think it was Mr. Radcliffe who was pointing out that maybe we don't want to lose him because of his unique expertise and his skill set. So it was communicated to the organization that he was interested. Again, assuming the facts in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, why does it matter that the organization then chose not to communicate that to the decision maker?
Your Honor, it's relevant to the fact that the cases we cite in our brief, including the Chambers case from the Eighth Circuit and the Green case also from the Eighth Circuit, that require the employee to seek out the job that he claims he was passed over for. And we don't think that generally saying, look, I'll do whatever it takes, that's all he said, is sufficient to seek out that position.
Tell me what more he could have done, not having been made aware of the positions.
What positions are available is one question.
If he says I'm available for all positions, why would he need to also say what positions are available?
Because he had been in the international scouting department based in Australia since 1991, and the twins' top management within the scouting department, the baseball operations department, viewed his skills, his knowledge, his expertise to be tied to the Australian scouting market.
Well, counsel, I have a couple of questions on that, because first of all, he said, when you read his statement, that I'll move back. I take as saying he's willing to move back to the United States. He's actually a United States citizen, and move back to the headquarters or the United, you know, either Minnesota or the United States. That seems to be a pretty strong statement of that he's willing to move back. Second of all, his skill set is scouting and finding talent. Now, granted, a portion of that would be knowing how things work in Australia and in parts of Asia, but a key component of his skill set is finding talent for the organization. That seems to be a skill set that's transferable that could be moved from any location, whether it's North America, South America, Asia, Europe, whatever. And when he's expressing his willingness to his supervisor, who's the one who's telling him, we're going to be eliminating our operations essentially in Australia, and he responds to him, and there's evidence in the record that these positions aren't posted. These aren't things that you can go out on the internet and see. Why isn't his letting him know of his interest to remain with the organization, to move back, to do whatever it takes, to take a pay cut? I don't know how he could have expressed more his desire to stay with the Twins.
Because the, again, just because he expresses a desire doesn't require the Twins to say, okay, we now have an obligation to find you a position because you're a good scout, or we think your skills might be transferable.
Doesn't the record contradict that? Because Mr. Radcliffe actually argued on his behalf and said we should keep him. He has a unique skill set that we should keep. We should find another position for him. So why that? Construing the facts in the light most favorable to him, why shouldn't that be construed to say at least one person within the Twins organization said we need to find another home for him here?
And even if you accept that, Your Honor, it's a good question. Accept that as true. It doesn't require the Twins to find him another position. If one person among the decision-making group says, I think we should try to find him a position, it doesn't mandate that the Twins find him such a position. And we cite the cases in
our... So clear, it may not, I don't think anyone's arguing that it may, in fact, Mr. Year said it's not a mandate. The question is, you were arguing before that he really didn't put himself out, he didn't do enough to apply for the position. But if Mr. Radcliffe, going back to Judge Reyes's question, if Mr. Radcliffe puts on the table, puts him in consideration with the other decision makers, that his skill set is suitable for one of those positions, it seems to me the organization has treated him as if he has applied and then rejected the application.
And maybe you're getting to the point that I was just going to make, Your Honor, is that issue of soliciting a position, an alternate position, is really as to the prima facie element, which we recognize, of course, the district court did find there to be sufficient record evidence to generate a fact issue so as to preclude summary judgment. And the judge did not find that factor had been satisfied, or not satisfied, I should say. And so that's really as to the prima facie argument. With respect to step two of the test, which is the legitimate non-discriminatory reason, that gets back to what Mr. Ure said, is that they don't contest that the Twins made the business decision to refocus their international scouting philosophy away from Australia. And it's the same reason that they did not consider him for other positions, again, because they are entitled to make the determination that his skills were tied to Australia.
Can I ask you about that particularly? Again, looking at the facts most favorable to the non-moving party, I'm curious about a rough percentage. Can you give me an approximation as to the percentage of talent secured by Mr. Norsetter that was from Australia over the years? What percentage of those individuals those players that he brought into the Twins organization was from Australia specifically?
Well, brought into the organization versus made contributions at the major league level is really the question. It was the reason for the Twins' decision that, look, we are spending, as vis-a-vis other major league clubs, we're spending an inordinate amount of resources scouting and signing players out of Australia that do not make a major league impact. And so,
you can answer broadly then.
Yep. It was very, very small. There were very few Australian signees who eventually made an impact, is what the baseball people say at the major league level. And I can't name the names, but it's a couple.
So just so we're clear then, and that goes right to the heart of my question, would you agree then that most of the individuals secured by Mr. Norsetter, who were the high-level contributors that you're suggesting to the Twins organization, actually came from places other than Australia?
So there is a lot of mention in the briefs regarding Mr. Norsetter being involved with signings from players outside of Australia, which was not an issue below, because again, he was always based in Australia and primarily responsible for Australia, collaborated with other scouts in connection with scouting the Pacific Rim in international showcases, et cetera, et cetera. And so the view when Mr. Levine and Mr. Falvey came in to the...
Well, can I just get you to answer my question though? Are you saying then that those individuals that were the high level contributors, the players that were the high level contributors to the Twins, that Mr. Norsetter contributed to, or Mr. Norsetter participated in bringing them into the Twins organization, most of them were from outside of Australia?
I guess I honestly, Your Honor, I don't have that breakdown, but I would tend to agree with you that if
that's the case, if that's the case, that most of the people that he brought into the organization that were the Twins were most interested in actually came from outside of Australia, why then does it matter that he lived in Australia? You're saying that's a reason that they said no to him for these other positions?
Because the record is as well, Your Honor, that the Twins have a historical practice of not relocating scouts outside of the area in which they live. And that part is undisputed. And the one last thing, I see my time is up. Of the international scouts that were not retained over the years, there was not a single one of them that was ever relocated to a domestic position, like the one that the appellant is requesting here. I see I'm out of time, Your Honor, unless you don't have any other questions. I'll
stop. Indulge me with one more question, if I could ask the presiding judge.
Yes, you may, Judge Ross.
Did any of these other individuals that you're referring to maintain a citizenship in the United States, like Mr. Norsetter? I know he lived in Australia, but he's a U.S. citizen.
He's a U.S. citizen, but he has permanent residency status in Australia. I don't know, for example, the other international scouts that had their positions eliminated as part of the same elimination here, if they did. I think the answer, Your Honor, is no, candidly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Osmus.
And thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Irwin, 5 minutes of rebuttal, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Concerning the last point, I believe the testimony in the record is that the plaintiff has not provided evidence that other international scouts had transferred to the United States. Of course, I don't know how we would ever have that. And defendant never provided evidence in the form of admissible evidence that had never happened ever. And I tend to think it's unlikely that it had never happened. But regardless, the question is not historically what they did. The question is what they did with respect to Mr. Norsetter and why they did it. And again, they can argue that he did not sufficiently express his interest. I guess that means he did not call up all Twins managers, people involved in scouting, and ask them what positions they had. And I think clearly he did sufficiently express his interest. And then that raises the question, if he was, as they acknowledge, a very good scout that had been with the Twins for 25 years, why wouldn't they have simply told him after he indicated that he was interested? Why wouldn't they simply tell him, well, that's great that you want to remain with the organization. Here are some possible places that you may be able to apply your skill set, and you should contact these individuals to pursue those opportunities. So again, when you look at the people that were hired, you look at the age of people that were dismissed around the time that Norsetter was dismissed, and they were almost all around this same age. And you look at the employee manual, which clearly indicates that someone who's dismissed for reasons other than cause, that the Twins will make an effort to find some other place in the organization for him. You look at the weakness of their explanation, which I consider it not to be an explanation at all. It's simply a statement that he lived in Australia. His title was not Australian Scout. His title was the International Scout, International Scouting Supervisor.
Right, but the fact of the matter is, regardless of what title, I mean, you can give anybody any particular title. When you look at his particular position, his position was to find talent primarily in Australia, and he had been based in Australia for nearly 30 years. So it seems to be that that's where his skill set lied. I was wondering if you could turn specifically to the pretext issue, because if we assume that the district court was correct in its findings of pretext and, you know, basically the burden shifting here, and when we get to the pretext issue, not only do you have to show that there was that the reason presented by the twins was pretextual, but that the pretext for it was discrimination. And can you explain why it was discriminatory?
Well, we think there's sufficient evidence, and this isn't even including the evidence that we believe we're entitled to that we haven't received, for a jury to draw that conclusion, because there is no, you know, why are they providing pretextual explanation that isn't true? The jury in that situation can, based on all the evidence, conclude that the true reason was a discriminatory reason.
But your argument is it's age discrimination, and yet a good number of the people that had been hired after or had taken over some of his responsibilities were fairly close in his age, were in their 40s and 50s, and even Mr. Radcliffe, my recollection is he was actually older than him. So I'm struggling with the discriminatory pretext. In other words, that they let him go primarily based on his age, when they're bringing in other people and having other people take over his positions, his duties that are fairly close to his age.
Well, again, I mean, I think we've all been focusing on the question of why wasn't he considered for these other positions, including two positions in his area. In fact, the memo from Levine that indicates that they should part ways with Norsetter also said that we should hire scouts for the Japan market and for the Taiwan market. And just to briefly respond to what you said before, he lived in Australia, and he scouted in Australia. But there was, you know, Australia is a small country in terms of population, and there was limited available talent, and that's why he scouted in Japan, in Europe, in Taiwan. And he also spent a lot of time scouting in the United States, both amateur and at the professional level.
Can I ask one follow-up question, Judge Slater?
Yes, Judge Rush, you may do so.
I'll follow up on a question that I asked your opponent today, which is, can you estimate for us the percentage of secured talent that Mr. Norsetter found from Australia? That is, I'm trying to get a sense of what proportion of talent did he find from Australia, from the United States, from other countries in Asia, if you know.
Just in terms of the number of players, or in terms of their, you know, trying to determine which are really good players. But I really don't, but I would refer you to his affidavit and his resume, which is attached to the affidavit, which does identify many of the players that he signed.
Does it clearly identify that they're the venue from which he signed them? I saw the long list of names. But I'm trying to get a sense of, I'll just tell you why I'm asking this question. If the Twins organization feels that his location in Australia matters, I would assume that's because the people he recruited, the people he scouted, were mostly from Australia. But if those players were actually mostly from other places, then it may counter the premise of their position. I'm just trying to get a sense of rough numbers. If you know, if you don't, I can look to the record and maybe try to discern if it's there.
I don't. I would point you to there is in the record information on how much money the Twins spent signing players in Australia, which over the course of the years involved was a very relatively small number. I don't recall exactly 100,000 or a year or around that range.
Thank you.
I think in terms of the best players that he signed, really I believe only one or two were from Australia. The rest were from other locations.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your arguments today and appearing virtually, and it seems to have worked without a glitch. We appreciate that as well. We will take the matter under advisement, issue an order, and you both have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, Your Honor.